This is Radio Superior 1929, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1920s. This is a true story of our past, so step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is radio station KUWS, broadcasting from Superior, Wisconsin, USA. We wish you a very pleasant evening. Henry Morgan here. It's 5 p.m. Central Standard Time, Thursday, February 14th, 1929. Happy Valentine's Day, and beware of the mistletoe.
That's Christmas.
Mistletoe, my lovelorn friend, is forever. Mr. Lou Martin has the 5 o'clock report, including incredible reports from Chicago and Devil's Island. We'll have the sporting news, and the Duluth Superior Harbor Masters Barbershop Choir will sing Valentine's Day love ditties for us and have advice for Lou and other members of the Lovelorn.
Stop calling me Lovelorn. And where's Jack?
He's in Chicago. He's going valentining, whatever that is.
He thinks he can get valentines from the ladies if he goes from place to place, kind of like Halloween and candy. But Chicago's not the best place to be today.
The 5 o'clock news report is presented by Popkin Furniture. They have a tasteful living room suite developed in rich mohair for just $149. Good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Henry, and good listeners. 7 die before shotguns of Chicago gunmen. President Hoover finishes inquiry into economic changes, and Hellhole Isle is still a prison to an old convict. We begin our evening World Wireless report from Chicago.
Patrick Kelly reporting, United Press. 7 employees of a Northside cottage company were murdered with sawed-off shotguns today when bandits raided the garage in which the company has its headquarters. Frank Greenberg, the only man to be taken from the scene alive, died a few hours later in a hospital. His last words when asked who shot him were, "I'm not talking. Nobody shot me." Police say the assassination is an outgrowth of the Chicago beer war, and it's likely that some of the men working for the SMC Cottage Company are engaged in running beer. One of the dead is said to have been identified as Pete Guzenberg, a lieutenant of George Bugs Moran, Northside beer rival of the infamous Aalto Gang. Pete's brother Frank was also fatally wounded. The raid is one of the most daring in the history of Chicago gang feuds. 2 carloads of raiders drew up in front of the garage shortly before noon, leaped out and entered the garage. Came then the roar of sawed-off shotguns. Neighbors say they thought there had been an explosion in the building. A few minutes later, half a dozen gangsters raced out of the garage, took their places in the 2 automobiles, and speeded away. The victims were treated in the usual gang manner, shot down without a chance to defend themselves. Every available squad car at the detective's headquarters was pressed into action today and raced north through the loop with screaming sirens. When police arrived, they found everyone who was in the garage had been shot, lined up against the wall as though for execution. Several of the victims appeared to have attempted to run after being shot, but none of them got far. The body of Pete Guzenberg lay under a sink, and nearby was the form of his brother Frank. Physicians say he was in no condition to answer questions before he died. Important representatives of Chicago officialdom flocked to the North Clark Street address as soon as the news of the assassination spread. Police Commissioner William Russell issued a statement describing the outrage as the last straw. Quoting Russell, "The gangsters have declared war openly and boldly, and the police department has accepted the challenge. I am issuing orders for the arrest of every gangster, hoodlum, and racketeer in the city," unquote. Bugs Moran, whose late brother-in-law owned the garage and the cartage company, is known as an associate of Scarface Al Capone, the Chicago beer lord. Bugs is said to be second successor to the alcohol domain on the north side once ruled by Dean O'Banion, the Irish gang leader who was murdered in the struggle over the beer trade. On Chicago's north side, this is Patrick Kelly, United Press.
This is Frank H. Bartholomew in Los Angeles. An effort to rescue a man buried alive for 46 years in what's being called the worst prison on earth began here today. The man is Paul Lamont, a citizen of Belgium and a former master of languages at London University. The prison is Devil's Island and its associated penal colony of Salerat de Moroni in French Guiana. 6 years ago, the 78-year-old Lamont had finished a 40-year sentence for forgery and was a free man. Today, he is more surely a prisoner than at any time during his years of servitude, according to a report to the Belgian ambassador at Washington by American W.E. Allison Booth, who had just returned from the French penal settlement. Second officer on a supply steamer, Booth spent 3 months at Salerat while he became acquainted with many of the thousands of men who are not allowed to live, not allowed to die in the equatorial prison. Lamont's plight so touched him, Booth said, that immediately upon reaching Los Angeles, he sent the following letter to to the Belgian ambassador, quote, I have just returned from the French penal settlement of Saint-Laurent-de-Maroni, and I feel it is my duty to call to your attention the pitiable case of a citizen of your country. This man, Paul Lamont by name, has been at the settlement for 46 years, since 1883, during the last six of which he has been a free man. However, owing to the French government making no arrangement for the return of the prisoner after completing sentence, he has been in abject poverty and near starvation for 6 years, with no prospect of returning to the civilized world before he dies, unquote. In an exclusive interview with the United Press, Booth told of some of the things he saw and heard at Saint-Laurent's, which cost him 8 days in a dungeon and came near to making his stay permanent. Quoting Booth, it is commonly supposed that Devil's Island is the penal settlement. This is not so. The Rock, as it is termed, is a receiving station. Here the prisoners are given solitary confinement. When they are thoroughly disciplined and their spirits completely broken, they are transferred to one of the settlements, the principal being Saint-Laurent. To get to Saint-Laurent's, you have to steam 40 miles up the sluggish Moroni River amidst dense jungle. Monkeys chatter in the trees. Parrots screech overhead. A regiment of men could be 100 feet away without giving any trace. When the ship is tied up at the wooden jetty, convicts are marched by the guards to unload it. They are the most helpless men in the universe, for escape through the jungle is almost impossible, and there is scarcely a chance in a million that they will ever see France again. Saint-Laurent is only 6 degrees from the equator, but the convicts are issued neither hats nor shoes. One day I counted 9 convicts who dropped from the effects of the sun. The guards made no attempt to help them, and when 2 other convicts moved to assist them, they were belabored with whips. Even the privilege of bathing in the shark-infested river has been denied the men because of suicides by convicts who had come to prefer the man-killers in the water to the man-killers on shore and deliberately swam out beyond the safety of the shallow water. Such washing as is done now must be done with water out of the drinking ration. This is the kind of thing Paul Lamont suffered for 40 years as a convict. Since his release, things have been even worse. For now, he is not attached for rations. He is ragged and bearded and almost helpless. Yet through it all, he has kept his mind sane and bright, unquote. In Los Angeles, this is United Press staff correspondent Frank H. Bartholomew.
President-elect Herbert Hoover today completed a 2-day personal inquiry into the scope changes in the country's economy. Mr. Hoover gleaned information for formation of a tariff and other economic policies. The economic changes are from 1922 to this year. Hoover's report comes from more than 100 economists, engineers, and statisticians. Mr. Hoover is expected to shatter all presidential traveling records. Already he's gone to South America and the Florida Everglades. Traditionally, presidents stay close to the White House. The only president to leave the country during his term is Woodrow Wilson, who left for Paris after the World War. The president is allowed $25,000 a year for travel. Mr. Hoover is expected to use most of it. The Treasury has advised the House Appropriations Committee that it could use an additional $2.5 million this year in the enforcement of prohibition. Customs Commissioner E.W. Camp says the additional money will double the agents patrolling the Canadian border and increase inspectors in the Port of New York. Soldiers guarding deposed Soviet leader Leon Trotsky, while the world wondered at what spot he would write the next chapter of his tempestuous life history. Constantinople, Angora, and Berlin are a few of the places suggested. 4 of the most famous men that this age has produced are shown together in a remarkable group picture: President-elect Hoover, Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, and Harvey Firestone. This photo was taken at Mr. Edison's experimental farm at Fort Myers, Florida, where the president-elect, the motor king, and the tire magnate gathered to honor the aged electrical wizard on his 82nd birthday. It was posed for NEA News and rushed to newspapers nationwide by telephoto. Millions of girls throughout the world envy Miss Anne Morrow, 22-year-old daughter of Ambassador Dwight Morrow, who has captured the heart of Colonel Charles Lindbergh. The world-famous birdman is spending time with his fiancée, to whom his engagement has just been announced. Lindbergh met Miss Morrow while he was being entertained at Mexico City by Ambassador Morrow on his goodwill flight to Mexico in December of 1927. KUWS Radio News Time is 5:07. Henry Morgan has this message from Popkin Furniture.
It's a February for economy at Popkin Furniture on Tower Avenue in Superior. There is a tasteful living room suite developed in rich mohair for $149, and liberal terms are available. How about this five-piece Webster Furniture Breakfast Suite? Handsomely furnished in antique birch, a $30 value. Includes a drop-leaf table and four chairs to match. Sale priced complete, $1,975, and that is local Webster Furniture. Or how about a four-piece bedroom suite furnished with your choice of two styles of beds, French vanity, chest of drawers, and three sizes in dresser. The complete package, $109. Shop Popkin Furniture Company, 518-520 Tower Avenue, where your dollar buys the most.
Students playing hooky have more than tripled in the past year in Superior. Henry Peterson of the Superior Evening Telegram has the report.
During the first semester of this school year of 1928-29, the truancy department handled 725 truancy cases. Truancy department director Miss Adeline Kell presented a report to the Board of Education. Miss Kell made 419 calls to homes of children, visiting the parents and seeing that they were informed of their child's truancy. Warning notices after continued absence were sent out to 100 students during the semester. The work of the truancy department includes children in Superior public and parochial schools. While 725 cases were handled during the past semester, there were but 212 during the entire year of 27-28. Working in cooperation with policewoman Emma Tyler, Miss Kell assisted in bringing before the court five girls charged with shoplifting. The girls were habitual truants. Some of the thefts took place when they should have been in school. They were sent to a home for wayward girls. Miss Kell blames indolent parents. In some cases, the mothers do not get up in time to get the children off to school. Lou?
A state senator says Governor Zimmerman is turning a blind eye toward bootleggers. Arthur Bystrom has the story from Madison.
Senator Thomas Duncan of Milwaukee again repeated his charge that the Zimmerman administration kept prohibition agents away from Milwaukee. He testified at a hearing before the Elections Committee yesterday, calling for a referendum on the state's dry law. Assemblyman Frank Prescott of Milwaukee asked Senator Duncan what he meant by the charge. Duncan answered that there wasn't a dry agent in Milwaukee for 2 years. Senator Duncan declared that he favored the Canadian system of handling liquor. Quote, in Canada, people get pure liquor at modest prices, unquote. A woman inquired whether Senator Duncan favored making every home a saloon. Senator Duncan replied that such a situation prevails today. The Anti-Saloon League is the chief opponent of the measure. In Madison, this is Arthur Bystrom.
The trouble with university professors, as President Glenn Frank of the University of Wisconsin finds, is that there aren't enough good ones. Quoting Frank, as he told the Joint Committee of the Legislature, the brutal truth is there are not enough able and inspiring men in the teaching profession to man all the universities in the United States, unquote. President Frank is urging legislative action to keep salaries high. He told the committee the annual salary of a professor in Minnesota and Illinois is $5,000, in Michigan $6,000, in Wisconsin $5,300. Rumors in the Shawamigan Bay region are that President-elect Hoover may spend next summer on Madeline Island. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has the story from Bayfield.
Good evening, Lou. Mr. Hoover would be the guest of Mark Woods, wealthy Lincoln, Nebraska citizen who owns a summer home on the island. Hunter L. Gary was host to President and Mrs. Coolidge and their son John last summer. It's also mentioned in connection with Hoover's probable visit. News dispatches from Miami declare that Mark Woods has been the guest of Hoover and that the two friends fish together. Mr. Woods is prominent politically. It was he who gave the nomination speech for Vice President Charles Daw in 1924. Both Mr. Woods and Mr. Dawes are directors of the Central Trust Company of Chicago. Dawes was head of the La Crosse Gas and Electric Company several years ago and ends a controversial term as Mr. Coolidge's vice president next month. If Mr. Hoover doesn't spend the summer in the Apostle Islands this year, he may come next year, Lou.
Thanks, Mike. And that, Henry, is the news.
I've got a scoop for you, Lou. I may spend a weekend in Cornucopia this summer and do some fishing off Squaw Point.
I'll alert the wire services.
Now the forecast from the U.S. Weather Bureau in downtown Duluth for this Valentine's Day 1929. Looks like some snow tonight as temperatures warming from that cold grip we've been in this week. Tonight's low will be a balmy 5 above zero with a high tomorrow at 25 degrees. The Harbor Masters are here.
Oh, sorry. We're still getting organized. We wanted to give you a big Valentine's Day surprise.
Except Buddy here won't do it.
Buddy won't even get into the Valentine spirit.
That's not all Buddy won't get into.
Ready? A one and a two and a...
My wild Irish rose, the sweetest flower that grows. You may search everywhere, but none can compare with my wild Irish rose. She may let me take the bloom from my wild Irish rose, my rose, the bloom from my wild Irish rose, wild Irish rose.
That's the Duluth Superior Harbor Masters. They'll be back with more for our Valentine's Day special.
Hey, I want to be Cupid.
No. I want to be Cupid.
He doesn't look good in a diaper anyway.
It's time for reality in Realty with George G. Newton of the George G. Newton Realty in Superior.
What on earth is that racket out in the hall?
It's a bunch of rowdies, the Harbor Masters.
You'd better watch your step around them. They've got a reputation for frequenting gin mills and speakeasies and being out late when the moon shines, if you get my drift.
Oh, that's subtle. That's subtle, real subtle. So why did you invite him here?
Jack did. He thought it would be a good idea for Valentine's Day.
They're not bad singers.
Bourbon does that.
So, George, any good Valentine's Day deals today?
Oh, my, yes. I got a real sweetheart of a bargain. Two A1 houses at the corner of 18th and Cummings. You live in one, you rent the other. It pays for itself. And here's the best part. Well, I shouldn't say there's anything good about this, but, hey, look at it this way. You'd be helping a fellow out. The owner's got to sacrifice on account of ill health. You know, he's got to leave the city. So if you care for something sweet, you know, you got to look into this one. Okay, now, on Belknap Street, George G. has got a 3-room flat with hot water heat, $30 a month. I've also got a 6-room cottage with a bath at North 19th Street. That's available till May 1st. Hey, get a load of this, $22.50 a month. Now, at 1006 Broadway, you can rent a full 4-room basement. You get to use the garage, the phone, and bathroom. Now, you got to say that's got to be worth $45 a month. I mean, at least, right? If you see me, George G. Newton of George G. Newton Realty, I'll let you have it for $25 a month. Now, that's the reality of George G.'s Realty. And Henry, tell Jack Boy to take it easy in Chicago. I mean, he's a small-town boy, naive and stuff. And all that shooting that's going on there, he could wind up in the middle of it.
That's the bet here.
Lou's giving it even odds that Jack has an encounter with the Chicago Beer Wars while he's out valentining.
I'll give it even odds that he's responsible for it.
Thanks, George. You can let the arguing guys in now.
Hiya, fellas. Come on
in. Hey,
nice straw hats. And what's with the big diaper?
Well, better big than too small.
Looks like he lost a bet.
I'm glad I'm Cupid. I get to shoot arrows at people. I think I'll start with Harry.
But Laura has it that whoever you shoot with the arrow falls in love with the first person they see.
And what if Harry gets hit? He looks at Harvey first.
Keep those arrows in the quiver. The wife wouldn't like me bringing Harvey home. Not after the last time he was over.
Real nice Valentine's Day talk. Where's the romance?
The sensitivity.
The kindness.
The respect.
The candy.
Last night alone on our way home, you turned and said to me, I love you so and I want to know, what do you think about me? What you are to me, sugar and spice and everything nice, you're all a girl should be. Soon we'll marry, you'll be my blushing bride. I will smile.
These guys are good. They sing better than they look.
Or act.
Good thing.
Well, if no one else is going to say it, I will. Buddy, that diaper is just not you. It might work for Buster Keaton or Charlie Chaplin, but man, something's not right.
I know what it is. It's the calf-length black socks and two-tone shoes. It ruins the diaper effect.
I never thought to buy shoes and socks to go with a diaper. Besides, my feet get cold. It's February, for crying out loud. And in mythology, Cupid doesn't even wear a diaper.
Look, you fellas got another Valentine number for us?
No,
what do you think?
Well, we could sing that one, yeah.
Let's try that.
Wild Irish Rose?
No.
Let me call you sweetheart, I'm in love with.
Hey, guys. Nice work. Let's take a break for sports. Since I'm sitting in for Jack, Bill Kirby is sitting in for me. So, take it away.
And away we take it. No man in sports has made more successful comebacks after being down by Dame Fortune than George Herman Ruth. The Babe's in Florida now, trying to forget the recent tragedy in his life and getting ready to carry on as baseball's home run king. The Big Bambino is exploring the sand traps of the Jungle Club of St. Petersburg, playing as much as 36 holes of golf daily. When the New York Yankees assemble at their training base, they'll find the Sultan of SWAT steps ahead of the rest for the baseball campaign. Babe doesn't know the word quit. Ruth is intensely human. Suspensions and slumps due to his own boyish carelessness have caused him much remorse. But after each slip, he's rallied to the high position he holds in our national game. Of course, the Babe will be the Babe. It's rumored he'll ask to have his current contract of $70,000 torn up. The Bambino wants an unheard of $100,000 a year. Hey, Babe. Even the president doesn't make that much moolah. He just celebrated his 35th birthday. Fandom will be with him until the day they cut his uniform off his back. The boxing world is waiting word on Max Schmeling's threat to quit the quest for the heavyweight title unless freed from the contract that binds him to his German manager. Schmeling's victories are the sensation of the boxing world, but the New York Boxing Commission says he can't go with American manager Joe Jacobs. Jack Sharkey and young boxer Stribling step through spirited workouts. The Boston heavyweight is training at the Miami Beach Kennel Club while Stribling is working out nearby at an abandoned swimming tank. Locally, the W.J. Smith Candy Company leads the Merchant Bowling League this winter, with Lehman Bakery hot on their heels. Third place is Running's Tin Shop, the Saratoga Cafe, and Fox's Chocolate Company. And that's a sweet way to end our Valentine's Day sports, Henry.
That's our pinch-hitting sports guy, Bill Kirby. It's your turn, boys. Take it, diaper boy.
Heart of my heart, I love you. Life would be not without you. Light of my life, my darling, I love you. I love you. I can forget you never. From you I never can say.
And that goes out to the Harbor Master's official Valentine of 1929, Mrs. Annie Asker.
She's my Valentine, too.
Wait a sec. You guys are fighting over a married woman?
That's not right.
We are indeed. You see, Mrs. Asker is a widow.
She celebrated her 82nd birthday Monday.
She came to Superior in 1884.
From Sweden. A real pioneer.
Our engineer has a hookup with Jack McKenna on the long distance.
Jack, can you hear us? The harbor masters are here.
Speak up, man. It's noisy here in Chicago.
The harbor masters are here.
Did they bring along Cupid like I wanted?
Why on earth would you want a guy to be dressed like Cupid? He's got a diaper on.
Is it Buddy?
It's me. You know I'm getting teased about this diaper.
Don't let it get to you. Be a man.
It's hard to be a man when you're wearing a diaper.
You want to know what's worth, Jack? It isn't the diaper. That's kind of comfy. It feels smooth.
We don't want to hear about diaper feelings.
So, Buddy, what's worse than the diaper?
Diaper rash.
No, I use powder.
So what's worse than the diaper?
The worst thing is these wings. You ever try wearing wings? You never know which way they'll wave. You keep thinking there's something over your shoulder.
So, Jake, are you staying out of trouble? Chicago's a pretty tough town, especially today.
Tough? These are the nicest folks I've ever met. You see, my car broke down on the north side. But I was lucky. I was able to make it to a garage.
The north side?
Did you get the name of the place?
Of course I did. The Cartage Company. Real nice fellas. And they were the best-dressed mechanics I've ever seen.
In suits?
Lumpy suits?
In suits, real classy. I pulled in. They worked on my car real fast. They wouldn't even let me out of my car. And they don't work like regular mechanics. They don't use toolboxes. Believe it or not, they all carried violin cases. They fixed me up, though. Pushed the car out. Didn't charge me a dime. Kind of like they were in a hurry. I think they were working on some old jalopy, because as I was driving off, I heard a lot of backfiring going on inside.
Cartage Company Garage?
Backfiring?
Violin cases?
We've got to let you go. Stay tuned for the Grand Rapids Furniture Musical Hour, followed by the Branzers Musical Program, and Standard Oil presents the Red Crown Station of the Air. We'll be back, same time, same place on your radio dial. The good Lord willing, and Jack doesn't bring back mechanics with violin cases. For Lou Martin, Jack, George.
We are the Harbor Masters from Duluth. We're here tonight to entertain you, and that's the truth. We sing. the next day or two, said the weatherman from our hometown, when he spake, chilly today and hot tamale, and cooler by the
This is Henry Morgan wishing you a happy Valentine's Day.
I've been valentining all afternoon. I got two hearts, a box of chocolate, one black bottom dance, nine get lost bubs, and one funny root beer. Not much root in that beer, I'll tell you that.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1929, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Al Katz, Bruce McDonald, Kent Vogel, Tony Jasmine, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1929 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.